Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, Extra Topping. Now, we haven't had one of these for a while. In fact, we only ever did 10, so this is actually episode 11. But I'm using this as an excuse to fill in this month with a hastily put together episode. As I explained at the end of the podcast, we have not been able to get together as a group for a couple of months now, due to a tragedy in one of our podcast hosts' life. So I put off episode 100 for as long as I could to so that we could all get back together and record as a complete podcast rather than having one of them missing. So please sit back and enjoy this Cosmic Pizza Podcast Extra Topping episode all about the comedian and humorist David Sedaris. Thank you very much. David Sedaris was born on December the 26th, 1956, and is an American humorist, comedian, author, and radio contributor. He was publicly recognized in 1992 when National Public Radio broadcast his essay, Santaland Diaries. He published his first collection of essays and short stories, Barrel Fever, in 1994. His next book, Naked, 1997, became his first of a series of New York Times bestsellers, and his 2000 collection, Me Talk Pretty One Day, won the Thurber Prize for American Humor. Much of Sedaris's humor is autobiographical and self-depreciating, and often concerns his family, midlife crisis upbringing in the suburbs of Raleigh, North Carolina, his Greek heritage, homosexuality, jobs, education, drug use, and obsessive behaviours, as well as his life in France, London, New York, and the South Downs in England. He is the brother and writing collaborator of actress Amy Sedaris. In 2019, Sedaris was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Sedaris was born in Johnson City, New York. His mother was Anglo-American, and his father was of Greek heritage. David was raised in the Greek Orthodox faith. The Sedaris family moved when David was young, and he grew up in a suburban area of Raleigh, the second oldest child of six. His siblings, from the oldest to youngest, are Lisa, Gretchen, Amy, Tiffany, and Paul, the rooster. Tiffany died by suicide in 2013, a subject David discusses in the essay Now We Are Five, which was published in The New Yorker and included in his 2018 essay collection Calypso. After graduating from Jesse O. Sanderson High School in Raleigh, Sedaris briefly attended Western Carolina University before transferring to and dropping out of Kent State University in 1977. In his teens and twenties, David dabbled in visual and performance art. He describes his lack of success in several of his essays. Sedaris moved to Chicago in 1983 and graduated from the School of the Art Institute in Chicago in 1987. While working odd jobs in Raleigh, Chicago, and in New York City, Sedaris was discovered in a Chicago club by radio host Ira Glass. Sedaris was reading a diary he had kept since 1977. Impressed with his work, Glass asked him to appear on his weekly local program, The Wild Room. Referring to the opportunity, Sedaris said, "I owe everything to Ira. My life just changed completely, like someone waved a magic wand." Sedaris's success on The Wild Room led to his National Public Radio debut on December the 23rd, 1992, when he read a radio essay on Morning Edition titled Santaland Diaries, which he described his purported experiences as an elf at Macy's department store during Christmas in New York. Santaland Diaries was a success with listeners and made Sedaris what the New York Times called a minor phenomenon. He began recording a monthly segment for NPR, which was based on his diary entries and was edited and produced by Glass. He also signed a two-book deal with Little Brown and Company. In 1993, Sedaris told the New York Times he was publishing his first book, a collection of stories and essays, and he had 70 pages written of his second book, a novel about a man who keeps a diary and who Mr. Sedaris described as not me, but a lot like me. In 1994, Sedaris published Barrel Fever, a collection of stories and essays. He became a frequent contributor when Ira Glass began a weekly hour-long PRI Chicago public radio show, This American Life, in 1995. Sedaris began writing essays for Esquire and The New Yorker. In 1997, he published another collection of essays, Naked, which won the Randy Shilts Award for Gay Nonfiction from Publishing Triangle in 1988. Naked and his subsequent four essay collections, Holidays on Ice, Me Talk Pretty One Day, Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, and When You Are Engulfed in Flames, became New York Times bestsellers, spanning from 1997 to 2008. Me Talk Pretty One Day was written mostly in France over several months, and it was published in 2000 to practically unanimous rave reviews. For that book, Sedaris won the 2001 Thurber Prize for American Humor. In April 2001, Variety reported Sedaris had sold the Me Talk Pretty One Day film rights to director Wayne Wang, who was adapting the four stories from the book for Columbia Pictures. Wang had completed the script and begun casting when Sedaris asked to get out of it after he and his sister worried how their family might be portrayed. He wrote about the conversation and its aftermath in the essay Repeat After Me. Sedaris recounted that Wang was a real prince. I didn't want him to be mad at me, but he was so grown up about it, and I never saw how it could be turned into a movie anyway. In 2004, Sedaris published Dress Your Family in Corduroy and Denim, which reached number one on the New York Times notification bestseller list in June that year. The audiobook of Dress Your Family, read by Sedaris, was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Spoken Word Album. The same year, Sedaris was nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Comedy Album for his recording Live at Carnegie Hall. In March 2006, Ira Glass said that Sedaris's next book would be a collection of animal fables. During that year, Sedaris included several animal fables in his US book tour, and three of his fables were broadcast on This American Life. In September 2009, a new Sedaris collection was announced for publication the following year. The collection's working title was All the Beauty You Will Ever Need, but Sedaris retitled it Indefinite Leave to Remain and settled on the title When You Are Engulfed in Flames. Although at least one news source assumed the book would be fables, Sedaris said in October 2007 that the collection might include a surprisingly brief story about his decision to quit smoking, along with other stories about various topics, including chimpanzees at a typing school and people visiting him in France. The book was described as his darkest as it dealt with themes of death and dying. In 2008, Sedaris received an honorary doctorate from Brigham University. In April 2010, BBC Radio 4 aired Meet David Sedaris, a four-part series of essays which Sedaris read before a live audience. A second series of six programmes began airing on BBC Radio 4 Extra in June 2011, with a third series beginning in September 2012. In July 2017, a sixth series was aired, and by the 2025, the series had reached its 10th season on Radio 4. Here is a clip from the BBC 4 radio series. It is season 2, episode 2, and discusses about how difficult the French language can be with its masculine and feminine verbs.
This is from a book called Me Talk Pretty One Day, and it's a grammar story called Make That a Double. There are, I have noticed, two basic types of French spoken by Americans vacationing in Paris, the hard kind and the easy kind. The hard kind involves the conjugation of wily verbs and the science of placing them alongside various other words in order to form such sentences as, I go him say good afternoon. And, no, not to him, I no go in him say now. The second, less complicated form of French amounts to screaming English at the top of your lungs. Much the same way you'd shattered a deaf person or the dog you thought you could train to stay off the sofa. The speaker carries no pocket dictionary and never suffers the humiliation that inevitably comes with pointing to the menu and ordering the day of the week. With easy French, eating out involves a simple, bring me a steak. Having undertaken the study of hard French, I'll overhear such requests and glare across the room thinking, that's Mr. Steak to you, buddy. Of all the stumbling blocks inherent in learning this language, the greatest for me is the principle that each noun has a corresponding sex that affects both its articles and its adjectives. Because it is a female and lays eggs, a chicken is masculine. Vagina is masculine as well, while the word masculinity is feminine. Forced by grammar to take a stand one way or the other, hermaphrodite is male, and indecisiveness, female. I spent months searching for some secret code before I realized that common sense has nothing to do with it. Hysteria, psychosis, torture, depression. I was told that if something is unpleasant, it's probably feminine. This encouraged me, but the theory was blown by such masculine nouns as murder, toothache, and rollerblade. I have no problem learning the words themselves. It's the sexes that trip me up and refuse to stick. What is the trick to remembering that a sandwich is masculine? What qualities does it share with anyone in possession of a penis? I'll tell myself that a sandwich is masculine because if left alone for a week or two, it will eventually grow a beard. This works until it's time to order, and I decide that because it sometimes loses its makeup, a sandwich is undoubtedly feminine. I just can't manage to keep my story straight. Hoping I might learn through repetition, I tried using gender in my everyday language. Hi, guys, I'd say, opening a new box of paper clips, or, hey, Hugh, have you seen my belt? I can't find her anywhere. I invented personalities for the objects on my dresser and set them up on blind dates. When things didn't work out with my wallet, my watch drove a wedge between my hairbrush and my lighter. The scenarios reminded me of my youth when my sisters and I would enact epic dramas with our food. Ketchup-wigged French fries would march across our plates, engaging in brief affairs or heated disputes over carrot coins while burly chicken legs guarded the perimeter, ready to jump in should things get out of hand. Sexes were assigned at our discretion and were subject to change from one night to the next, unlike here, where the corn cob and the string bean remain locked in their rigid masculine roles. Say what you like about Southern social structure, but at least in North Carolina, a hot dog is free to swing both ways. I wonder whose job it was to assign the sexes in the first place. Did he do his work right there in the sanitarium, or did they rent him a little office where he could get away from all the noise? There are times when you can swallow the article, and others when it must be clearly pronounced, as the word has two different meanings, one masculine and the other feminine. It should be fairly obvious that I cooked an omelet in a frying pan rather than in a wood stove, but it bothers me to make the same mistake over and over again. I wind up exhausting the listener before I even get to the verb. My confidence hit a new low when my friend Adeline told me that French children often make mistakes, but never with the sexes of their nouns. It's just something we grow up with, she said. We hear the gender once and then think of it as part of the word. There's nothing to it. It's a pretty grim world when I can't even feel superior to a toddler. Tired of embarrassing myself in front of two-year-olds, I started referring to everything in the plural, which can get expensive, but has solved a lot of my problems. In saying a melon, you need to use the masculine article. In saying the melons, you use a plural article, which does not reflect gender, and is the same for both the masculine and the feminine. Ask for 2 or 10 or 300 melons, and the number lets you off the hook by replacing the article altogether. A masculine kilo of feminine tomatoes presents a sexual problem easily solved by asking for 2 kilos of tomatoes. I've started using the plural while shopping, and Hugh has started using it in our cramped kitchen. where he stands huddled in the corner shouting, "What do we need with 4 pounds of tomatoes?" I answer that I'm sure we can use them for something. The only hard part is finding some place to put them. They won't fit in the refrigerator as I filled the last remaining shelf with the 2 chickens I bought from the butcher the night before. Forgetting that we were still working our way through a pair of pork roasts the size of Duraflame logs. "We could put them next to the radios," I say, or... "Grind them for sauce in one of the blenders. Don't get so mad." Having 4 pounds of tomatoes is better than having no tomatoes at all, isn't it? Hugh tells me that the market is off limits until my French improves. He's pretty steamed, but I think he'll get over it when he sees the CD players I got him for his birthday.
This second clip is taken from a section called English Lesson and is in the 21st episode.
There's a language instruction course I turn to quite often. Pimsleur, it's called. And I first used it in 2006 when preparing for a trip to Japan. I am American, I was taught to announce somewhat sheepishly at the start of Lesson 1. Half an hour later, I'd advanced to Nihongo ga jozu desu ne, which translates to, "Your Japanese is so good." It seemed a bit early in the game to be receiving compliments, but still I learned to recognize the phrase and to respond to it, saying, "Thank you very much, but I am not really skilled yet." This came in handy, as once I got to Tokyo, every time I opened my mouth, I was clobbered with praise, even if I was just saying something simple like, "Huh?" Pimsleur offers courses in umpteen different languages, and though I haven't checked, I'm guessing that 30 minutes into its French program, you're not being told how great you are. They specialize in teaching you what people actually say, mindful that it's going to vary from one country to the next. I know they offer an English course for native Spanish speakers, but I'm not sure if it's geared to UK English or to what you hear in the US. The former would most certainly include "at the end of the day." Turn on British TV or follow anyone named Ian for more than a few minutes, and you're guaranteed to hear it said. In France, I feel the most often used word is "connery," which means crap. And in America, it is hands down "awesome," which has replaced "incredible," "good," and even "just okay." Pretty much everything that isn't terrible is awesome in America now. Pimsleur's made me hyper-aware of the phrases I hear most often over the course of an average day. So aware, in fact, that I've started jotting them down in hopes of putting together my own language program. One for business travelers visiting the U.S. Let's start at the airport newsstand, shall we? There you'll lay a magazine upon the counter and be asked by the cashier, "Do you need some water to go with that?" This will be said as if the two things should not really be sold separately. As if, in order to properly read a copy of Entertainment Weekly, you'll need to first rinse your eyes out with a $4... with a $4 bottle of Evian. This business of pushing more stuff on you is called top-selling, and is one of those things that once you notice it, you can't stop noticing it. At the airport in Baton Rouge a few years ago, I ordered a coffee. "Do you need a pastry to go with that?" the young man behind the counter asked. I wasn't too shy to order the coffee, I said. "So what makes you think I'd hold back on a bear claw if I wanted one?" The fellow shrugged. "We have Danishes, too." On second thought, "I don't want anything," I told him. Then I went a few doors down to Dunkin' Donuts and said, "I would like nothing but coffee, just coffee, period." The woman behind the counter crossed her syrup-colored arms. "No cup?" "Well, of course I want a cup." "No milk or nothing?" This always happens when I'm trying to make a point. "And milk," I told her. "Coffee in a cup with some milk in it, but nothing else." Then, of course, my flight got delayed by 2 hours and I had to go crawling back for some munchkins. Do you need a coffee or soda to go with that? The woman who'd replaced the one I'd spoken to earlier asked. Increasingly, at southern airports, instead of a goodbye or thank you, cashiers are apt to say, have a blessed day. This can make you feel like you've been sprayed against your will with God cologne. Get it off me, I always want to say. Quick, before I start wearing ties with short-sleeved shirts. Go to a restaurant anywhere in the United States, and 3 minutes after your food is delivered, your server will return to the table asking, how's that southeastern lard pocket? Once in Kansas City, at a place called Tomfoolery's, this was amended to, how's that southeastern lard pocket tasting for you? As if it had the tongue instead of me. Mmm, I said, my mouth full the way it always is when the server returns. Awesome, I was told. I hope you're saving some room for dessert. This said with a chuckle that means, wouldn't it be funny if what I just said was funny?
All of these episodes can be found on a podcast called Forrible. The BBC Sounds does not keep these in their archive. This next excerpt is from the 24th episode, which talks about the difference between British and Americans.
Does anyone, I don't know, have a question?
You now live in the UK. How would you compare British and American people?
I've said this before, and I think I heard somebody else say it, but it just seemed right to me, so I've repeated it, is that in America, if your next-door neighbor has a Rolls-Royce, you want one too. And in England, if your next-door neighbor has a Rolls-Royce, you want him to die in a fiery accident. And that is a fundamental difference in the way that people think. I find, like, it's really rare for you to tell anybody where you live and then answer, and then not give you some lip about it. Well, that's posh, isn't it? It's like, I didn't move there to make you look or feel bad. You asked me where I lived. I find that people here don't complain as much. I don't know if they're just worn down. But they just kind of accept things. Like, our doorbell didn't work, and it meant a lot to me to have a doorbell that works. And so we called some guy, and then he fixed the doorbell. And then we rang it twice after he left, and then it was just broken again. And the same thing. Our washing machine was broken. And so the guy said, well, I'm going to have to order a special panel for that. And so he came, and he put the panel in, and then he left, and it's still, nothing changed. And it's like, oh, well, I guess this is our washing machine now, and we'll just put a sign out there that says, please knock loudly, doorbell out of order, and you just get beaten down, and you stop expecting. Like, I feel like when I go back to the United States, that's all I hear is people complaining about stuff. But then sometimes you come here and you think, well, somebody please complain. Thank you so much.
Sedaris released a collection of essays, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, in 2013, and in 2017 published a collection of his 1977 to 2002 diaries, Theft by Finding. Also in 2013, the film adaptation of an essay from Naked was released as a feature-length movie, COG. In 2011, Sedaris' essay Chicken Toenails, Anyone?, published in The Guardian, garnered some criticism over concerns that it was insensitive towards China and Chinese culture. A frequent guest of late-night US talk show host Craig Ferguson in April 2012, Sedaris joined Ferguson and the cast of CBS's The Late Late Show in Scotland for a theme week filmed in and around Cumbernauld and in Edinburgh. The 5 weeknight episodes aired in May 2012. Sedaris' 9th book, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, was released in April 2013. In 2014, he participated in Do I Sound Gay?, a documentary film by David Thorpe about stereotypes of gay men's speech patterns. He appeared along with his sister Amy as special guest judges on Season 8, Episode 8 of RuPaul's Drag Race. He also appeared as a guest in the Adult Swim television series Fish Sense Alive. Sedaris guest starred on the Netflix animated comedy drama series BoJack Horseman as the mother of Princess Caroline, voiced by Amy Sedaris. In 2019, Sedaris was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters. A greatest hits compilation of his essays and short fiction entitled The Best of Me was released in November 2020. Also in 2020, he published The Happy Go Lucky, in which he reflected on his relationship with his recently deceased father. Sedaris has written several plays with his sister Amy Sedaris under the name The Talent Family. These include Stump the Host, 1993, Stitches, 1994, and One Woman Shoe, which co-starred David Rakoff in 1995, and The Little Frida Mysteries, 1997. The Book of Liz, 2001, was written by Sedaris and his sister Amy and produced by Drama Department at the Greenwich Theatre in New York. Sedaris lives with his longtime partner and set designer Hugh Hamrick. The two met in New York City in 1991, and in 1998 they moved to France together, later relocating to England. Sedaris frequently mentions Hamrick in his stories, describes the two of them as the type of couple who will not be married. Sedaris currently divides his time between Rackham, West Sussex in England, and New York City. In 2013, he qualified for British citizenship, and Sedaris told an audience in Sydney, Australia in February 25, he did not have time to get the passport. In 2013, he purchased a beach house on Emerald Isle, North Carolina, and many of the stories in his 2018 collection Calypso are set there. Sedaris is known for regularly spending hours removing litter from the roads and highways in West Sussex. Because of this hobby, he's known locally as Pigpen. He also has a waste vehicle named after him. His latest book is called Happy Go Lucky, and this is taken from the official David Sedaris website. David Sedaris is the champion storyteller. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And returns with his first new collection of personal essays since the best-selling Calypso. Back when the restaurant menus were still printed on paper and wearing a mask or not was a decision to be made mostly on Halloween, David Sedaris spent his time doing normal things. As Happy Go Lucky opens, he is learning to shoot guns with his sister, visiting muddy flea markets in Serbia, buying gummy worms to feed ants, and telling his nonagenarian father wheelchair jokes. But then the pandemic hits, and like so many others, he's stuck in lockdown, unable to tour and read to audiences, the part of his work he loves most. To cope, he walks for miles through nearly deserted city, smelling only his own breath. He vacuums his apartment twice a day, fails to hoard anything, and contemplates how sex workers and acupuncturists might be getting by during quarantine. As the world gradually settles into a new reality, Sedaris too finds himself changed. His offer to fix a stranger's teeth rebuffed, he straightens his own and ventures into the world with new confidence. Newly orphaned, he considers what it means in his seventh decade to no longer be someone's son. And back on the road, he discovers a battle-scarred America, people weary, storefronts empty or festooned with help-wanted signs. Walls painted with graffiti, reflecting the contradictory message of our time. Eat the rich. Trump, 2024. Black Lives Matter. In Happy Go Lucky, David Sedaris once again captures what is most unexpected, hilarious, and poignant about these recent upheavals, personal and public, and expresses in precise language both the misanthropy and desire for connection that drives us all. If we must live in interesting times, there is no one better to chronicle them than the incomparable David Sedaris. He also has a 2025 tour, which spans in September 2025, Stockholm in Sweden, Amsterdam in the Netherlands, Zurich in Sweden, Berlin in Germany, Kilkenny in Ireland, Galway, Cork, Dublin, Belfast, Lancaster, Pasadena. He then has 27 dates in October, When you consider there's 30 days in October, that's pretty good going. In November, he has another 21 dates and takes a rest until next year. He finally comes over to the UK and has dates in July for Birmingham, Cambridge, Edinburgh, Manchester, London, twice, Poole and Bristol. These are new dates and I have managed to get a ticket for the Manchester date in early July. He was once coming to the Liverpool area, probably about 10 years ago, and I failed to get tickets then, and I've regretted it ever since. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him in Manchester. If you get the chance to see David Sedaris, I suggest you take it. He's incredibly funny, very dry, and has an acerbic wit, but he also has the sarcasm of an Englishman. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode, hastily put together, because we've not been able to get together as a Cosmic Pizza group for quite some time now due to some sad family issues that one of our hosts has had. But hopefully we should all be back next month with episode 100, in which we talk about, well, tune in and find out.
I was going to read a few things from my diary here. July 18th, 2018, Newcastle. At last night's Q&A, a man stood up and identified himself as a maths teacher in Sunderland. So I look out my classroom window one afternoon and see a girl picking up rubbish in the schoolyard. I said to her later, "I saw what you were doing, and I applaud you for it." She told me that her whole family collects trash off the ground. Then they throw it out the window when they come to Newcastle. December 20th, 2018, Albuquerque. What is it about Albuquerque? I'd been signing books for 20 or so minutes last night when a woman told me about a friend of hers who owns a pug. He recently had an operation on one of his eyes, so was having to wear a surgical cone around his neck, which he did not like one bit. All he did was whine and try to wrench it off, which was super irritating. My friend removed it just for some peace and quiet, and the pug scratched at his bandage with his back leg so hard that his eyeball literally popped out of his head. And he ate it. I made all the appropriate noises and facial expressions. Horror, delight, horror again. And the woman said, "I knew you'd love that story." She got that right. All night long, I repeated it. "That is so interesting," said a woman I met a few hours later. She was a psychiatrist assigned to the county jail, where a prisoner who was addicted to meth but had been clean for a month due to his incarceration dug both his eyes out with a teaspoon. He ate one, but not the other, possibly because he could not find it. I repeated the dog and the human story to someone an hour or so later, and she told me about another man, not a prisoner, who also dug his eye out with a spoon. He was convinced there was a camera behind it, she said. "So was there?" I asked. Because after all that effort, you kind of want the guy to have been right. Later still, I met a woman with a friend who's in a gay gardening club called Fruits of the Earth. Albuquerque. May 18th, 1999, Cologne, Germany. Harry Rowald, the fellow who translated my book into German and is reading with me on my tour, told me that when someone on the bus or at a nearby table in a restaurant talks on a cell phone, he likes to lean over and shout, "Come back to bed, I'm freezing."